Welcome to Underdog to Unstoppable. I'm Nicole Anderson, and today we're proving that no matter the odds, resilience rewrites the story. You're watching Now Media Television. Welcome to Underdog to Unstoppable. I'm Nicole Anderson. This is where we tell the truth about the climb, the setbacks, the risk, the moments that could have ended the story but didn't. Today's guest chose reinvention over comfort. David Kleiman is partner at Kleiman Financial. David, welcome.
Thank you, Nicole, for having me.
This show is about the underdog moment, the point where you decide to step forward even when it's uncertain. And David, I'm so certain that in your past that you took the risk and it was uncertain. So tell us a little bit about what that looks like.
Okay, so just to talk a little bit about where we got started, I work with my son, and he started a financial planning firm at the time, probably about 10 years ago or whatnot. At the time, I was working for a hedge fund, and he asked me to leave the fund and come and join him in financial planning. And the reason I thought that was so important is that I had gone, and my family, we had gone through some serious financial hardships. I have six children, and the regular mortgage, private school, synagogue, and I was drowning in credit card debt and personal debt, and didn't really know how to get out of it. So through working through the hedge fund, I started to come out of it. But I just realized at that time how little financial literacy there really is among people, how intimidating it could be, and how I can help them with my son as well.
You know, it's one of the things we always go back, and like when my daughter was in school, I was so frustrated because they didn't teach financial literacy. Like, they didn't teach budgeting. They didn't teach how to pick a career. None of those things. And I thought, I was like, gosh, I didn't. And looking back on it, I didn't know how to do taxes when I turned 18. I didn't know how to do any of those things. And that's when I really learned that financial literacy is just not, like, a lot of people just don't have it. So I think it's phenomenal that you've built a business around educating individuals on financial literacy. What was your career prior to deciding to jump into the financial sector?
Well, as I mentioned, before I joined my son and his financial planning firm, and we call it a son father because he started it, I was at the hedge fund for about 7 years before that. But even before that, I mean, and sometimes my son doesn't let me talk too long because I'm a little older and have a longer resume. He doesn't let me talk too much. But I was in the jewelry business for many years. 9/11, when that happened, sort of wiped that out. Went into the watch business. And even before that, I was working for a watch company in Williamsburg. And even longer before that, I came down from Toronto in the early 90s. I grew up in Toronto, and I was working in the carpet industry. So it's been a bit of a varied background. But for me, you know, I did go to business school. So to me, it's business principles applied throughout, really. It's just a question of the terminology and how to approach it.
I would agree. The business world teaches you a lot about business. It sounds like you kind of have had the entrepreneur spirit for some time. So it was like really no sweat to like jump into another business, right? And yeah. Go ahead.
No, it's always, you know, it's always that you mentioned before, it's always that uncertainty as well. You know, when you start and you're in your own business and you know, I have one of my sons. He works as inventory control in a tile company. He says, how do I stay this? His first real job, he says to me, how do I stop thinking about the business all the time? It's like the weekend. I go home. I'm still thinking about it. That's really what it is. When you go on your own, that's what you start thinking about all the time, because there is that risk. There is that uncertainty. You know, then things are going to be up and down. And how are you going to handle it?
100%. And how does financial illiteracy affect families?
Well, I mean, it's just so overwhelming and intimidating. And, you know, we talk about something called money talks, and people are just afraid really to talk about it. But just the stress that it causes people And we hear this all the time, you know, first of all, we do budgeting for people and people will say, I know, even those people that are making, earning good money, they'll say, I know I'm making money. I just don't know where it goes every month. And that kind of, that's sort of like the uncertainty and the unknowing is really causes just so much stress. And that can, you know, drive, you know, that could cause problems with the marriage and to be the best parent that you can be. It's all about that and that you're thinking about it. And sometimes when you just go through the exercise of the, even just a simple budget exercise, and we have a value exercise because we always approach our new clients with that, with our value assessment first. But once you do the budget assessment and you, and people see what it is on paper, you know, like the fear and the uncertainty and the evil magician that's like crouching there, you know, sort of goes away, and they're now able to say, oh, well, that is something actionable now. Now I see where I am, what I'm doing, what I've got, and now I can take action the next step. And then, you know, right away, then you can come up with a plan.
Well, I remember the first time I did a budget and I realized how expensive I was. And I was like, maybe I need to stop spending so much money. And, you know, I think that people don't realize that part of financial literacy is your eating out, your how much you spend when you're eating out, how much you spend when you go shopping, how much you spend in gas, like those things, just like understanding like how much you spend per month on any of those items. And you, I think, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you have to, if you're wanting to educate yourself financially and then get into a better spot, there's some things you have to sacrifice in order to get to that place. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, cool. I mean, that's so true. I mean, just the fact that you go out, people go out for lunch, like this is such an easy fix also. Like you go out for lunch, you're spending $20 a day on the sandwich truck down the street, where you know how much money you could be, it could be $2. You buy a loaf of bread and some cold cuts or some cheese, and you make your sandwiches the day before, and you could be, you know, the next thing you know, you're saving $100 a week. That's $5,200 a year. That, you know, that's some money that could be used to, you know, in areas that you need to bring it down. I mean, you know, the credit card debt is just crazy. And once they get once they start paying those huge interest payments, you know, that $5,200 can be used to reduce that.
Oh, wow. That's a good point. 100%. I mean, I guess now thinking back on it, my mom used to be able to, with $100, make us 2 weeks worth of dinners out of $100. Maybe I should go back and like learn from her a little bit. What obstacle did you personally have that you had to overcome to like jump into this next chapter with your son and the financial business?
Well, there was a couple of areas which, you know, I was a little hesitant, I have to say the truth, to work with my son, you know, and because you hear like, especially like through business school, you hear all these horrible stories, how the family dissolves. You know, that when you get with money, you know, you could have a decent relationship with someone and then money comes in between it and everything just dissolves over that. You're fighting over $10, you know, and so that was made me very nervous about it, just to make sure that wouldn't happen. And I sort of made up in my mind to say that, you know, no matter what, on the money side, I'm the father, even though he started the business, which I think helped him actually, to work together. But I wasn't going to allow that to affect us. And to some extent, I've been able to do that. And I think that's why we've been able to manage. So that was something, certainly, you know, that was my biggest fear. You know, I didn't want to end up with one of these families that don't speak to each other. I had that growing up. I didn't know I had an aunt until I was like 13. Oh, wow. You know, my father never told because he had a fight with the husband at some point, and we never even knew. So that I definitely wanted to avoid the best I could. You know, it wasn't worth it to me to sacrifice that relationship. So that was the first thing. The other part of it is, again, you know, when you're in financial planning, you have to build your business. Nobody's giving you anything. You know, it's a famous, and I know, Nicole, you know this too. You know, you sounds a little whatever, but you kill what you eat. You have to find new clients. Mm-hmm. You have to build your business. And thank God we've been able to do that over the last 9 years. But, you know, sometimes it's not, you know, sometimes it's slower than others. Sometimes, you know, it's beyond your control. So you also have to recognize that when things are beyond your control, and to have some patience. And if you're doing the right thing, if you're helping your clients, and you're trying to bring some financial literacy, and you're doing a value assessment, and you're helping with people with their budget, and you're really genuinely helping people, people recognize that, and over time, you know, it turns around.
Yeah, and I, you know, the service-based businesses are a little bit more difficult and challenging than having a product, right? Like, people want that tangible product. They want anything that they can use or anything that they can gift or give to someone else. So a service-based business, it does take a little bit more boots hitting the ground, getting to people, letting them know why they need this service, right? Like they need this. But I think financial literacy is just a topic that's not talked about enough. And like you said, most people, I mean, I remember my grandfather one time, he pulled out a $100 bill out of his wallet. And I was like, oh my gosh, how many $100 bills? I was just excited about it. And he's like, you never ask a man how much money is in his pocket, ever. I remember that conversation, right? Like it was just taboo to have the conversation about finances. I don't know the exact statistic, but I remember reading at some point that finances is the number one reason for divorce. Correct. Is because people don't have the conversation or talk about it, and they get in debt. They get the stressors of money, and we can definitely talk about that in some of the next segments. Because as you said, you were raising a family of six, and you had some financial hardships, and what does that do to a family? And we can definitely talk about that a little more. We've heard how the leap happened. When we come back, we'll talk about the foundation, the principles that turn a family business into a trusted force.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities.
And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together.
This is Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Watch anytime on Now Media Television app, available on Roku, iOS, and Android, or stream at nowmedia.tv. David, let's talk about how you actually build trust in an industry where skepticism is high. Financial literacy isn't just about numbers. It's fear, security, and long-term decisions. And we spoke a little bit early on in our conversation about the fear around finances. And so let's talk about when a family walks into your office and they have tension, they have pressure, they have credit card debt, they have the bankers coming down on them, and everything is going wrong. What is your conversation with them? How do you start that?
Yeah, so the first part of our conversation, and let me just start off by saying that when I went through that situation myself, the worst thing I did was I hid everything from my wife. I didn't tell her anything. She didn't know anything about it. Everything would be like stress her out. So I felt it was my job to keep it from her. But that's the first mistake and the biggest mistake probably I made. You're a team. Husband and wife have to work together. So that's the first thing we're going to talk about with husband and wife. And we really want to meet with the husband and wife together if that's at all possible. Sometimes it's not. And we want to get started somehow, but typically we want to tell the husband and wife that they're a team. They got to work on this together. It's too much stress for one side to look after it and not the other. So that's the first step that we're going to take. If we can meet with both of them, we can get them both on the same page. And again, the next thing we want to do, we not want to put any blame. The blame game is over. That doesn't make, there's no advantage to that. That doesn't help anybody for that. It depends on what they're looking for. I mean, if they're in a serious financial situation, then that's the next step that we have to talk about. There's no blame. How do we go from here? We are at this point, however we got here, how do we go from there? That's the next area that we're going to stress to them. And then what we do is we'll do a value assessment. And now we do that with all our clients. We have a little card game that we play. We're also behavioral financial advisors at BFAs. Most people don't know what heard about that, but it's a game of 52 cards with 52 values on it. And we want to work with both husband and wife together to get to their top five values. And now we're starting to get to know who they are and what they're all about and what they're looking to accomplish. And that's really the first step in building the relationship, because it's not going to be about product. It's not going to be about, you know, financial wherewithal. That's always very important. But the first step is to get to know them, build the relationship, and find out what is it that they value? What are they looking to accomplish? And whether they're in financial straits now or they're not, and they just need some financial literacy, because you wouldn't believe how many people don't have that literacy. And that's another area that we'll stress. People think that they're in it by themselves, that they are different than the rest of the world. Everybody, you know, they're the only ones that don't know anything about finances, and they're the ones that are intimidated. It's 95% of people that we talk to have the same issue. So you're in the same boat as everyone else. And that's why you come to a professional like myself. So we'll do the value assessment. We're going to stress those areas. Then we're going to get into a pretty deep financial fact find. We have some software that we use. We have some spreadsheet. And that's when we're going to get into the nitty gritty of where all the finances are and what you need to do to go to move forward. It's going to be, we do a lot of life insurance. We'll do some wealth management. We'll do, the talk about 401ks. Can you save money on taxes? Where are the expenses? Where is there somewhere you can save? We had one client, she came in with a pink book with all her expenses. She said she was a psychiatrist. Her husband was a heart doctor, and says, I know I'm making money. I don't know where it goes every month. So it turns out once we did our exercise with her, she was paying like three different babysitters. She says, you don't really need all those babysitters, especially your kids are in high school all the time. He says, well, now I see where my money's going. And it was up to her whether or not she wanted she didn't want to fire them because they were like family, but at least now she had the questions answered. So that would be the next step. And then we'll come back. And this could be over 3, 4, 5 different meetings. We're not in any rush. You're not paying for time. We don't charge for time. We don't have any minimums. So we just want to get to know what you're doing, what you're all about, what you're looking for, and build that trust and relationship over time. And sometimes we may not be the right people for you. You may not be the right people for us. And there's no problem with that also. You know, it's not everybody's going to be a fit for us. Not everybody's going to like us. But then we'll come back, make whatever recommendations we think are important.
When you're having these discussions, what are some of the blind spots or some of the places that people don't want to look that maybe our viewers can start like assessing, right? Because, you know, the obvious, right? Like, okay, I spend too much money on takeout. I spend too much money. But what are some other blind spots that people might have that they forget about when they're actually looking at budgeting and their financial situation?
Right. So there's a couple of areas that are really stand up. I actually have on our list of 7 different ideas about that. But I'm just going to stress today, for interest of time, what I think are the most important. And people think about wealth is just about their investments. You know, they still think about, you know, what their returns are going to be, but they ignore the structure. They ignore the taxes. They ignore the legal entities, the estate planning, the risk management. But, you know, they can still lose wealth through poor planning, even if they're getting great returns. So they could say, oh, I made 20% in the market last year, but that doesn't really translate. And so, you know, that's an area that you have to look at holistically. And that's what we do to make sure that everything is looked at together. And one of those areas is underestimating the taxes over time. Like, you can do very well. Like, a lot of people will do a lot of permanent insurance and the product will grow tax deferred and you can take it out tax free. It says, well, why can't I just take that money and invest it in the S&P? You're always going to pay capital gains on that on that growth. And people forget about that. Oh, I made X amount of dollars again. But you forget 40% is going for capital gains unless we can plan around that. And the worst thing, I think, is that we'll deal with it later syndrome. You know, that they do a lot of different areas, but they forget about, you know, making sure everything is looked after, the beneficiaries, who's going to have power of attorney, who's going to be beneficiaries. All that has to be looked at and not just pushed down the road. But the part that I always talk about is the overconfidence during good times. People say, oh, this is going to last forever. I'm making so well. I mean, the market has been doing phenomenal the last couple of years and it's going to go forever. That's not how it works. The market is always up and down, and you have to plan for that. And you have to not freak out when the market does go down, because we know one thing, and one thing we always stress is the certainty and uncertainty. We know there's going to be uncertain things that are going to happen. And you have it, without proper planning, you're not going to be prepared for when it does.
Well, and, you know, speaking of some blind spots and some areas that people don't pay attention, I'm obviously a busy person, like most families, right? And so I was doing ordering groceries to my house. I would have this thing delivered to my house just because it was faster. And I think one of my girlfriends was like, Nicole, do you know how much you're spending in delivery fees and service fees by doing that? And I was like, oh, it's not that bad. And then we started quantifying, and it was probably $150 to $200 a week just in delivery and service charges. And it got me to start looking at things a little bit more, because it was like, okay, well, if they shop for me and I pick it up, I don't have all those fees. So I can just do a pickup. It's still saving me a whole bunch of time. I'll just run by there on my way home and grab this stuff. And so for like the common families, just like the babysitter situation, right? Paying three babysitters, those blind spots are something that I think having an extra voice to kind of say, hey, you know, look at this, you know, might want to do something a little different, just so that you're able to save money. I think, and then you can do the wealth management, right? Like those savings, that $200 a week in service charges, I'm pretty certain you would say, how about we put it here and let's make you some money on those service, on what you would have been paying for service charges.
Correct.
So you're a father of six. You're also a grandfather of five. Congratulations. Well,
five and almost six.
Almost six. Congratulations. My family just had a new baby as well.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she's 2 months old. And then we have another one in May. And then I think everybody's done until great grandbabies. How does that influence the conversations you have with your clients?
Well, I feel like, and that's one of the reasons that our son-father dynamic works well, because, you know, we could talk from a long range of experience. Like we're in the Orthodox Jewish world. So in that world, there's a lot of money spent for tuition, you know? Okay. And so, you know, it's all private school, and just the amount of tuition is unbelievable. And so I can say, I went through that. I know about that. That's something that I can relate to. That's something that I sympathize with you on, and let's work on that part of it. And knowing how difficult that can be. But as my son, though, he's in his 30s, and he's expecting his third child, and he's just going through it. I'm happy I'm done with it. But he can also relate to those people that are in that area in that time now as well, trying just to build their growth. So we get a lot from different sides, and we're able to empathize a lot on both sides.
And I think that's phenomenal, because most of the people that you will probably deal with are going to be families, right? Like just trying to make it through, like trying to build wealth, build something to pass on, a legacy to their children, whether that's a small inheritance or a large inheritance, you know, whatever their family looks like. And I think that's important that you're able to relate to them. And you know, it's hard in the HR business to always relate to people, because they're like, how does this relate to me? But I think in something as personal as financial services, I think it's important for people to say, oh, you've struggled as well and you've gotten out of it. Yeah. I want to talk to you. Right. Like I think that helps that transparency is paramount.
And just that they know that I know what they went through. I had the same feelings of panic and being on and the loneliness and being on my own and hopelessness. It's really hopelessness until, you know, I was able to get out of it.
Yeah. And I think that's exciting for your clients, is that you're able to do that. And, you know, trust is built intentionally. And up next, we'll talk about resilience, sacrifice, and what happens when the pressure hits.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities.
And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together.
We're back on Underdog to Unstoppable with David Kleiman.
Hi.
We're going to talk about the fight behind the scenes. But first, we want to know how our viewers can get in contact with David. So David, please tell us.
Thank you, Nicole. So everybody can reach us through our website, which is www.kleimanfinancial.com. That's K-L-Y with a Y. I was told that my grandfather came over to Canada. I grew up in Toronto. He just wanted to do a Y. He didn't want to do an E-I. He was a little bit too lazy. So it's Kleiman with a Y. Or you can just book directly through Calendly at David Kleiman, all one word, and book an appointment either way.
Thank you so much, David. And viewers, please check out David's website and book a meeting with him. You're going to have such a great conversation about financial literacy. And we look forward. So we're going to jump back in because we have some really great conversation going about the families and financial. But, you know, we definitely want to know a little bit about the entrepreneur side of this as well. So before we jump completely in or even more so into the financial literacy part, tell us, David, like since launching Kleiman Financial, what do you feel has been the toughest entrepreneur moment for you and your son?
Well, I think we talked a little bit about this before, but, you know, any type of business is always up and down. And but, you know, I don't get a salary. I work on the clients that I have. So, you know, when business gets a little bit slower, which it always happens to be, that's, you know, sometimes when you doubt yourself, maybe this is not the right thing for what you're doing. Maybe you should be switching to a different career. I had other careers in my span, and maybe it's time to move away. Maybe this is not working. You know, maybe it worked for a certain amount of time, a couple of years, and now it's time to move away. I've had other situations. So that's always been a difficult moment for anybody, I think, in that type of business when, you know, you're not sure, like maybe you're not going to, you know, you have some savings, perhaps you don't want to touch them, perhaps, or maybe you don't. And you're not sure where your next, where the next mortgage payment is going to come from. That's always a very difficult time. So you really have to be committed to what you want to do.
Oh, yeah, I would agree. I would say that was probably the scariest thing for me when I started my company was, you know, how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to pay my car note? How am I going to pay the light bill? How am I going to put food on the table? And it's definitely scary. But I also realized that that's not just an entrepreneur fear, right? Like there's people who work a 9-to-5 or work a regular job that aren't entrepreneurs that still have the same struggles, right? They still struggle to figure out how to pay the mortgage and how to put food on the table, how to send their kids to school and get them a great education. And so for you, one of the great things and probably the scariest things is that you work with your son, right? And you said earlier that you were always worried going into this, that you want to make sure that you maintain your relationship with your son. And then that was important for you. So when you guys have like disagreements, how do you handle those? How do you work through those to make sure that they're, you know, they end at the office and you guys can go have dinner together?
Right. So that's a challenge, of course. It's a little bit tough sometimes, but I think as long as you maintain your priority, and I got to say to his credit, maybe to my credit a little bit too, I want to say, but we've never really had that part. Like I've always, like he comes up, he's like more of the creative dreamer type of person. I'm more of the nuts and bolts. So that's why it also works well. Like he'll come up with ideas and I'll talk about, well, what's the downside? How are we going to make it work? How, you know, what are the nuts and bolts on this? And, you know, but I always had it in my mind also that I would never discourage him from doing anything. So, you know, out of five ideas, maybe, you know, one or two of them work out. So I'm happy with that. That's a great batting record. But, you know, but just to allow him that leeway on that side and on his side, you know, he told me at the beginning when I first started that he didn't want to hear any complaining from me about how hard I was working or, you know, coming in or whatever I had to do, which I was never my intention. But he laid it out and we were always able to be honest with each other on the areas that we felt that we needed to be. And I think just the mutual respect and love that we have for each other, you know, carried it through, I think.
Well, I mean, you have been successful. You both are still in business and you're still working together. So I think that's a testament to, you know, the family that you created and the bonds. Because like you said, a lot of families don't, they don't speak. And that's rough, right? Especially when you have, you know, a family that you've raised and watched grow up to not have that relationship. So kudos to you and your son for making that happen. And I think that that's an inspiration for some of our viewers who are thinking of possibly going into business with a family member, a really close friend, and understanding that, you know, the boundaries, you got to have boundaries between each other. I think one of the things I always say is because a lot of people are like hesitant about prenups before they get married, right? But I always say, like, you should talk about that stuff, why emotions are good, because if it does go bad, having those conversations when emotions are high, everybody's angry, they don't ever go well. And at least you've made, it's the same concept with you and your son, if you would not have had that conversation in the beginning about what the boundaries were, what his expectations were, what your expectations are during a disagreement, that could have escalated extremely high. And so I think that that brings me back to talking about families and talking about their financial situation, right? Do you find that it's better for families to have those conversations early on before there's trouble, or does it not matter during the, like, at what time, as long as those conversations happen?
No, I think, Nicole, you hit it right on the nail on, right on the head. Like, even with the prenup, and my daughter is actually getting married soon. She's like looking at a dress, etc. She's a lawyer, so I'm hoping she's looking at it. But you know, when things are good, that's when you need to do it. When you're getting into trouble and when the pressure's on and the emotions are high, that's a very difficult time to get any kind of agreement done. You know, you want to have an agreement done when you're basically on the same page as much as you can. So the more that you could talk about ahead of the game, you know, what those expectations are. And that is actually part of our process as well. Like when we're talking about our financial planning and financial literacy, you know, what are the expectations that each partner has on the other? Like what is that? How does that hit? Now, we're not going to be therapists, but that sometimes you need that as well. Like we all, you know, they will recommend that maybe you need a marriage counselor to sort that out. But that's also part of it. It's like what is each person's role? What are they going to be doing? What are their expectations? But you, again, I said before, you have to, the first part is you have to be as a team. You have to know, you have to recognize that you're working as a team towards the common good of you and your family. And if you keep that in mind, anything is possible. Sky's the limit.
Oh, yeah. And communication is a key to any relationship, right? It doesn't matter what relationship that it is. So you've been on quite a few media platforms, right? Like, and so having conversation, how has that visibility helped change the perception of viewers or potential clients to having the conversation about financial literacy? Because they're able to hear you and hear how down to earth you are and how you talk to them in layman's terms, right? It's not these big terms. How has that perception changed since you've been speaking out on major media platforms?
Well, I think, again, you mentioned it correctly, and I always liken it to, you know, like when you go into the supermarket and you're buying your laundry detergent, you know, you go right away to the Tide. Why is that? Because you've seen the commercial a million times. That's where you're more comfortable with. That's what you're familiar with. That's what you're going to go to. Could be there's like five different brands there, but they, you know, they don't speak to you the same way. So again, the same idea, having that exposure allows us just to be more comfortable with, you know, people more comfortable with us. And that just helps the relationship get off on the right foot.
It's amazing. Like I just listening and understanding, and I definitely, we're going to dive a little bit deeper into the financial burdens We've talked about pressure and persistence. When we return, we'll look ahead at legacy, impact, and what it truly means to become unstoppable.
Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more unstoppable stories and strategies for turning obstacles into opportunities.
And we're back. I'm Nicole Anderson, and you're watching Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Let's keep pushing past limits together.
This is Underdog to Unstoppable on Now Media Television. Watch anytime on Now Media Television app, available on Roku, iOS, and Android, or stream at nowmedia.tv. David, let's close with legacy. The underdog story isn't just about survival. It's about what you put your mind to and what you can do to leave a legacy. So in the financial world, we hear or read a lot about generational wealth, right? And building things to leave, whether it's finances, property, stocks, you know, stuff to leave family or your family once you pass on or transition out of this life. So talk to me a little bit about legacy and what you talk to your clients about when it comes to that part of the conversation.
Well, one of the main areas is making sure everyone has clear roles with and communication, like you mentioned before, Nicole, is always important no matter what across generations. So, you know, you have to make sure that the expectations, the values, responsibilities are always clearly discussed, and so that misunderstandings and conflict don't erode the wealth in the relationship. I mean, that's always sort of the problem, right? Like, when you're talking about legacy and handing down to future generations, you know, you don't want to have some huge lawsuit because there was misunderstanding. One person thought it should be like this and one person thought it should be that. And that's really up to the person that has the wealth at the time to make sure that's clear. The other part of it would be, and part of the other flip side of that is just to prepare your heirs for that stewardship. Who's going to be looking after that? Who's going to be in charge? Because not everybody, you can't have too many Indians and not enough with too many chiefs.
Right.
You got to make sure that there's one chief and the rest are Indians. So that's, and also the other part that we haven't really spoken about, but is a lack of coordination among the advisors. So you want to make sure that all the advisors putting together the legacy planning are all on the same page, whether it's coming to, you know, having insurance for estate tax purposes, or setting up the trust with the lawyer or the financial advisor for the wealth management. Everybody's got to be working together towards one clear goal. It really has to be defined by the patriarch, matriarch, whoever it is that's passing it down, and it's got to be clear so that they don't have that kind of infighting that you're so famous for. And all those lawsuits that go on and that erode, you know, the ones that make the money are the lawyers.
Right. And I think that all of that goes back to the conversation we had a little while ago, right? Like doing things when everything is good versus waiting until, you know, it's bad and, you know, everybody's fighting. Everybody wants the wealth. Everybody wants the money. Can you talk a little bit on somebody who doesn't believe that they have wealth or legacy to leave behind, right? So usually when you talk about generational wealth or something to leave behind, people think, oh, well, I'm not wealthy. I'm not rich, so I don't have much. But let's talk a little bit about that. Let's talk about the regular Joe that, you know, lives his life every day, doesn't make millions of dollars. Let's talk about his legacy and how we get them to understand that they have the ability to leave that.
And that's an area, of course, that we focus in on our practice as well, Nicole, is that no matter what your level of assets, we treat every client the same. It doesn't make a difference. You could be $10, $1 million, $10 million, $100 million. You get the same treatment from us because everybody has the same. And my father has a slogan that he used to like. He says, a dollar is a lot when you don't have it. So it doesn't make a difference how much you have. Everybody still wants to have the same peace of mind, giving it over to whatever it is that they have and to their children in the most effective way as possible. A lot of times that can be with insurance. Insurance, you know, for a small amount of premium, you could have a nice legacy to your children. So that's an area that we'll focus in as well.
Yeah, and I think life insurance is scary, right? People have had bad conversations about life insurance. I'm sure you're familiar with the agent that comes into the employer and is like, okay, you get $30,000 of life insurance by the company, and then, you know, you can buy additional because up to 5 times your salary. And people just don't understand it. They don't have, I mean, most people don't even know that you can convert that once you've left that company. And I think that that's important because another company might not offer it. And so I think educating on the life insurance piece and how important it is for your final expenses and, you know, to help your family a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about the life insurance and what that can be used for and utilized with?
Sure. So life insurance, just to give you a little bit of background, life insurance really comes in two forms. It's either going to be term insurance or permanent insurance. And term insurance, like it sounds, for a certain amount of time, usually 10, 20 or 30 years. But permanent insurance you'll have for the rest of your life. And the other aspect of permanent insurance that we like is what's called living benefits. You're able to take out from the death benefit in your life if a person got sick or ill, or you needed it for long-term care down the road. Now, some of that will have cash value with it as well. And it can work with your insurance that you have at the office as well. But that's not, don't forget, that's typically not portable, but you can buy your own standalone insurance with that. And it always, like, that's another reason to do the budget, because I always tell my clients it has to fit your budget. It can't be something that's going to stress you out. It's a set it and forget it. You have it, and then you know you can use it. If it's permanent insurance, it's cash value that you can access, you know, down the road. Or if it's living benefits, it can be available almost right away. Or if it's just term insurance, because that's the right fit for where you are financially. And just to have those final expenses paid out or not to be a burden for your family, that's always what we'll talk about with our clients.
Great. And I'm glad you provided that information to our viewers. And so giving them a little bit more things that they can take away from us today, what is a financial habit, if adopted today, would radically change the outcome of most families' futures?
So what I would say is, depending on what your budget is, put away some money into a savings account, a high yield savings account, not into the savings account that some banks give, don't give you any interest. High yield savings accounts can give you 3.5%, 4%. Put something in there every month. Doesn't make a difference. It can be $10. It can be $50, $100, whatever you're comfortable with. Doesn't have to be the same every month, but it should be a minimum. You should just put it away, have that discipline, and you won't believe over time, over the next couple of years, how fast that will grow. And that's something that you'll get the high yield and interest as well, so it'll grow even more. Just a habit to get into, and before you know it, you're gonna have more wealth than you could have imagined.
And for someone who feels behind, which I'm sure most people feel behind financially, what is the first courageous step they should take?
You got to do the budget. You got to do that exercise. I know it's a scary and intimidating process, but that's the first area that you've got to do. You can't know where you're going to go until you know where you are. So until you've done that budget assessment, and it can be, you know, typically it'll be with a professional like myself, and we don't charge for it. So it's just part of our service. Yeah, but that's really the first step, just to get to know where you are. So then you can know where you want to go.
And why, what do you think is the scariest part of the budget for people? Do you think that they're afraid to see what they spend their money on? Are they afraid to see that they don't have enough of it? Like, what do you think is like the scariest part of them, of people wanting to see their budget?
I think all those things. That's, I think, is the scariest part. They're afraid they're going to see it. They're going to have a shortfall. They may have to change, and they may have to change their lifestyle. Like, instead of what you were saying, Nicole, ordering the food to be delivered, and they now may have to go and pick it up for themselves and save that $100 a month or whatever it's going to be. You know, the people are afraid. They don't, you know, they're, you know, a lot of people are just maxed out as it is, you know, is that's how they feel. They can't do one more thing. But sometimes they just have to feel that they can do some more, but you know, it's got to be step by step. It can't be overwhelming.
Okay. And what could you say, what is the last piece of advice that you would give to our viewers? And something that, you know, could hit them. We've talked about life insurance and planning for the future, their legacy. We've talked about budgets, communication and having a conversation about it. Try not to be scared. But what is the biggest piece of advice that you would give our viewers right now? And besides coming to you, right? Like, that's the best advice. Like, sign up, get an appointment with me because I can help you. What is the last piece of advice you could give our viewers?
I would say just, you know, now we're getting to tax time as well. Gather all your information. You know, get that all together. If you have a CPA you're using for your taxes, he's probably harassing you to get all that information. But get all your information together so you can get as much of an accurate picture of where you are right now. You know, so you could see what your credit card statements are. You could see what you're paying in interest. You can see, you know, how much there is in this bank and that bank. You know, there's also a case that people forget about money that they put places. You could have an old 401k from three jobs ago that there may be money in there that you forgot about and that you need to roll over. So that's another area that you could have. You could have access to wealth if you just do the exercise and you know, take the bull by the horns.
Okay. And David, tell us one more time how our viewers can get in touch with you.
So on my website, www.klyman-financial.com, K-L-Y-M-A-N, what the Y, as my grandfather did for me, or just book on my Calendly. You can go on Calendly, and it's a Calendly/David Klyman, all one word, and just book directly on me. You could see what my openings are and whether it's 15 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever time you need. There's certainly no charge for that call because it's coming through Nicole, and happy to help.
Well, David, I truly appreciate your honesty, your transparency, and the advice that you gave myself as well, and our viewers today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
This has been Underdog to Unstoppable, and I'm your host, Nicole Anderson.